Happy, happy Thursday. It's getting close. Good morning and welcome. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. It is 7:07. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. Coming up at 8:35, spotlight on Valor. Stick around for that. Who ordered the code retina? Who ordered the auto pen signatures?
Oh.
Neera Tanden, former aide for President Joe Biden, told Congress that she had authorization to direct auto pen signatures for the president, but does not know who gave the final order.
How does that work?
Mm.
Here, you can do this. Well, who's telling you you can do this?
Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah.
It's a good source. It's someone we can trust.
Uh-huh.
You can do it now. We'll just tell you when.
Right.
This is crazy.
That is really weird.
Tanden served as a director of Biden's Domestic Policy Council, and she told Congress during testimony on Tuesday that the president used an automatic signature tool allowing for aides to sign pardons, memos, and other official documents in the White House. Tanden said she did not know who authorized those signatures. I mean, what do you mean you don't?
Somebody has to put something in front of you and say, sign this.
Somebody at some point said, you're authorized to use this auto pen.
Right.
But what were the parameters? Well, you can only use it when you also get word from X, Y, or Z.
Right.
Or, yeah, just make sure you check, you know, with the president first, you would think.
Okay.
Hey, I'm about to sign your name. Hey, yo, Jack. Hey, pal. I'm over here with your auto pen.
Uh-huh.
You might want to take a look at this stuff. You sure you want me to sign off on all this garbage?
That's just weird.
Yeah, it is.
There's some details missing here.
During her interview before Congress, which lasted more than 5 hours, she told lawmakers that in her role as staff secretary and senior advisor to the former president between 2021 and 2023, she was authorized to direct auto pen signatures on behalf of Biden. That, according to an oversight committee official. Tanden, who reportedly said during her testimony that she had limited interactions with Biden in her role. Limited. According to sources familiar with her testimony, described an approval process that left her, at least partly, in the dark about who specifically was giving final approval on the decisions to use the automatic signature tool.
Hmm.
Even though she simultaneously insisted Biden was in charge.
Okay.
So her interactions with Biden were very limited. But yet she had authorization and access to the auto pen signing his name. But then she couldn't tell you who was behind her signing various documents. Who called you and told you to do it?
Right.
Tanden reportedly testified that to get approval for the use of the auto pen signatures, she would send decision memos to members of Biden's inner circle. However, she added that she was not aware of what actions or approvals took place between the time she sent the decision memo and the time she received it back with necessary approval, according to the source familiar. A minority member of the Oversight Committee called Tanden's characterization a lie, with a statement from a former White House staffer saying that they received a written sign-off from Biden on every executive action she presented him with. Any other characterization is a distortion of the testimony, the official said, to intimate that Neera Tanden said President Biden did not approve every single presidential decision and sign-off on every executive action coming out of the White House is a lie. Tanden's attorney, Michael Bromwich, agreed with the staffer, adding that the auto pens were used after Biden approved the decisions. That doesn't sound exactly like what she testified to, does it? 5 hours they talked to her.
Man, that's
five hours.
That's a lot of chatting.
Well, they're trying to make a determination, like who was really running the show. I have a feeling it might be more than a single person. It probably was that so-called inner circle.
Yeah.
And you wonder how much sway that Jill held. Was Jill basically a proxy for Joe? on a bunch of occasions.
She sure tried to act like it a couple of times, didn't she?
Yes, she did.
Had presidential jacket on, sitting behind the desk, just saying.
Hey, coming up in less than an hour, Pete Hegseth, Secretary of Defense, is going to hold a press conference at the Pentagon, and it's with the idea to talk about Operation Midnight Hammer. And it'll be in response to some of these reports that question the success of the strikes. So that'll happen at, say, approximately 8 a.m. Probably some of the information will be shared, will be some of the same stuff that President Trump talked about at the NATO summit in The Hague, Netherlands. Trump read a report from the Atomic Energy Commission of Israel that stated the United States strike on Fordo destroyed the site's critical infrastructure and rendered the enrichment facility totally inoperable. The report further said Iran's capability to develop nuclear weapons was set back by many years.
Okay.
That's a little bit different than this so-called leak information. This leaked information was part of an incomplete report. It was a very, very, early report, and it hadn't been completely vetted yet when it was leaked. It's like, you got to hurry up and leak something damaging about the president. This is a big win for him. This is huge. Operation Midnight Hammer was an incredible, incredible success. We can't let him chalk up a win like this. We have to somehow make it look less than what it is. That's exactly what they're up to. All right? And I guess we're not surprised.
Not a bit.
So, you got that going on. And then, when do we hear about the big, beautiful bill?
Oh, yeah.
It comes up, but
yeah,
then it seems to be overshadowed by other things for a while. Here's the latest. There is certainly a big push to make the big, beautiful bill better.
Okay.
And that while it's in the Senate, that according to Senator Rand Paul, he spoke to the folks on Breitbart News Daily when asked by the host, Mike Slater, if the bill is Paul approved yet. The senator said, there's a push to make it better, to add more cuts to it. But then there's a tug from the other side to say, well, let's not cut anything, he said, explaining that they have taken most of the entitlements off the table. Social Security, Medicare, and most of Medicaid is taken off the table. There are some work requirements in Medicaid. It may save some money, but most of the formula shifts, having the states pay more than their fair share of all that's been taken off the table. All right, so we'll see. So the main problem that he has with it is the $5 trillion increase in the debt ceiling. I asked the Secretary of Treasury yesterday at lunch, I said, will the deficit be more or less next year? He wouldn't answer. And I answered for him. Basically, it's going to be more. What's going to happen is this year, it's going to be about $2.2 trillion. Next year, I think it's going to be about $2.5 trillion. So this depends on economic growth. Well, we knew that. We knew that. And they think there's going to be gangbuster growth. But there's a lot of doubts about that because the tax cuts were continuing, which I'm for, or a continuation of what already exists. All right. I'm still for tax cuts, he clarified. But to some people are saying it, we're not going to get the kind of growth that some may be expecting. We shall see. Part of that, dealing with the debt and the deficit and all that is, we have to pay interest on that.
Right.
And that is why Trump has really, attacked Jerome Powell. I mean, he did everything but call the guy a complete blanking idiot.
In front of everybody.
Yeah.
Big time.
I'm glad he didn't drop any F-bombs there.
Yeah. He's going to drop in bombs, but
he did point out, though, how just even a small reduction in the rate makes a huge difference in their debt repayment because the debt repayment's rescheduled you sign up for a 10-year period.
Mm-hmm.
716 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. What's bugging you is next. Call in now. 877-975-9825. What's bugging you? Brought to you by Florida Pest Control. The only bugs they can't control are litter bugs. is happening next. So call in now on 97.3 The Sky. It's Thursday. Good morning and welcome. Let's make it great. 7:21 right now on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. Time now for What's Bugging You? Call in, air it out, get it off your chest. 877-975-9825. What's Bugging You is brought to you by Florida Pest Control. The only bugs they can't control are litter bugs. Good morning, Jeanette. What's bugging? Good morning, Nathan. What's bugging you?
Hi, yes. I'm just calling because this thing in New York City with the one mayor that's been the Democratic nominee, how come no one's checked for voting fraud?
As far as the primary race goes, I'm assuming that they have the normal protocols. I don't think anybody suspects that there is a problem there. I don't know, but I'll look into it. To see if something, was going on there. I mean, Cuomo knows the lay of the land. If he feels like, you know, I think he saw internal polling and stuff that reflected that he probably wasn't going to win.
Right. But he sure wouldn't have thrown his hat back in if he hadn't thought he had a chance originally. I think he thought, yeah, I'm Cuomo.
Well, and if you're going to run anyway, you know your backup plan is running as an independent, then right. You're going to run and at least get your name out there and do all the things you need to do, and then you'll come back in the general as an independent, but who knows? Good morning and welcome. Call in now for What's Bugging You, brought to you by Florida Pest Control, 877-975-9825. Steve, what's bugging you?
The Florida legislature, they, under Florida's constitution, their one job is to develop a budget, approve it, and send it to the governor. The governor is supposed to have 15 days to review it and either line item veto. He can either approve it straight out, line item veto and approve it, or send it back to him. Our fiscal year begins July 1st. The legislature has yet to send the appropriations bill to the governor. And so technically what that means is if the governor doesn't sign it by July 1st, we're going into a partial government shutdown in the state of Florida. Why can't these people do their job? Maybe you can call Keith Perry and ask him.
All right. Yeah, there's some issues there. We've talked about it before. We'll talk about it again. Thanks. Good morning, Mark. What's bugging you?
Morning, gentlemen. Same topic. No, nothing's going on. Pam Bondi has not arrested anybody. We have so much evidence against these un-American treasonous commies. I can't say what I want to say, but where are the arrests? This is what we voted for, the American people. Let's see these people go to prison. Thank you. Bye-bye.
There you go. Let's go with Jerry. What's bugging you?
Hey, good morning, Bob and family. My next-door neighbor, one of the two spouses died, and they had a lot of cats, dogs, and chickens. Well, they've just, the surviving spouses took off and left all the varmints for us. That's what's bugging me. We're having to fix all the cats and find homes for dogs, and I don't know what to do about the chickens.
Wow. Hopefully animal control and the animal services and all those people, and even Humane Society, hopefully they're all part of the rescue and answering these questions and helping to find homes. Let's go to Mike. Good morning. What's bugging you?
Hi, Bob. First of all, I'm glad you're doing better, and prayers for you.
Thank you.
And what's bugging me is I lost my dog last month, and the vet actually made a mistake. $1,600. My pup died 5 hours later. Mm-hmm. So my other dog is very depressed. I go to the Humane Society, and I try and adopt a dog. And now it's $20 for a meet and greet. I did it over 2 days. Humane Society refused to give my 3-year-old Rottweiler an adoption with me with the other dog because she was sniffing the other dog. Doggies do that. So I go back a month later at their invitation, come back a month later, and I find a dog with an ailment that's been there a long time, and the manager there is pissed off that I told the vet tech that they were giving me a hard time about adopting a dog to me. And when I went to meet the little dog, they said, don't be surprised if we tell you no again. So I get upset about it, and he comes in the door, and he says, you're done, you're out of here. They actually called the police on me. All these puppies and doggies need homes, loving homes, and your last caller, and this, do you really think this guy deserves his job? Is he really trying to help these dogs?
Yeah, some of these people, they might have good intentions. Sometimes they're just a little drunk with a little bit of power. But there are still many, many animals that need to be adopted. And don't give up just at one place if that's your desire and you think you can provide a great home. Let's go to Mark. Good morning. What's bugging you?
Hey, good morning, Bob and Greg. what's bugging me is I really don't think Trump has any business bullying Powell for lower interest rates, because interest rates are not high. And for every person who wants to load up on debt, there's another person depending on that interest from their mutual funds and things like that. So I just think he should knock it off.
Sounds like Mark's got a bunch of money in the bank.
Oh, we know who to get a loan from, apparently, if we need a few
extra
bucks.
He's accruing that interest, man.
That's right. Who knows what he charges, though? Because we'd want lower rates.
I don't want a loan. I just want cash, brother.
Wow.
No. I'm just kidding. Mark's very generous anyway. Oh, yeah. You have to actually say no to his generosity.
That's true.
All right. It is 728 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here. We've got so much to talk about, and a lot of it has to do with the major operation, Midnight Hammer. Details on that and more coming up on News Talk 97.3, The Sky. $7.35 on the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is here as well. Your time check brought to you by Hayes Jewelers, where the answer is always yes. No war right now. It looks like there is still the ceasefire intact between Israel and Iran. Of course, things could change at any time, but that's what is going on right now. So at least there's that. If you're looking for something good to think about, some upbeat positive thoughts, we encapsulate that later on this morning into things that make you smile. But Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, in about 15 minutes, maybe 20, they're going to have a little press conference, a little get-together, and they're going to talk about Operation Midnight Hammer. And they felt like they had to do this in response to reports questioning the success of the strikes. And this was based on leaking part of a document that was a report that was not finished. It was not completely vetted. It's based on some intel very early on about the effectiveness of the strikes against Iran's nuclear program. And, of course, it was leaked to try to do damage to the Trump administration. And it's not even an accurate report. It's like they, of course, cherry-picked something in there that possibly could say, well, it's not as great a deal as you said.
Well, but as long as it's from a good source, Bob, I mean, you know, really, that's what really matters, right?
Well, yeah. You mean like the same reporter that put this out was the same reporter that put out the story about the 50 former Intel folks signing off saying that it was Russian disinformation, but actually it was Hunter's laptop? That, yeah.
I did say the source does matter.
One of the women involved, she worked for Politico at the time. But again, same reporter. So you have to wonder, agenda, anyone?
Uh-huh.
And we'll dig into this further because IDF, you know, the folks in Israel, they're saying that this was a huge success, that the American bombing of those three nuclear sites was highly effective in shutting down their program. They said set it back years.
Mm-hmm. But don't you love how the Iranians have come back and said, oh, it's a great defeat over Israel and the United States? What?
Well, it's...
I know. They do what they got to do. I get it.
They have to put out their propaganda and rhetoric and stuff. You know what?
I know.
They're probably on shaky ground with the people there, and especially if any of them can get any real information from the outside world, then yeah. But, you know, sometimes you just got to call it a day.
Yeah.
And, you know, pound some drinks, and it's nothing made easier than... a drinking game.
Oh.
And if you think this is something that you invented or the kids invented or something like that, you have to go a little bit further back in time.
Really?
Israeli archaeologists recently uncovered an ancient sarcophagus depicting a scene familiar to many today. A drinking game.
Really?
Yep. The Israeli Antiquities Authority announced the discovery in a Facebook post early June, June 9th. The Roman sarcophagus, or coffin, was found at an archaeological site within the ancient capital city of Caesarea. I'm not sure how that's...
It. Yep.
Yeah, I got it? Okay.
Yeah.
The discovery is the first of its kind in Israel. The marble sarcophagus illustrates a drinking scene between Dionysus... the god of wine, right? And Hercules.
What?
Yeah.
Hercules.
Pictures from this show, archaeologists beaming next to the discovery. They're pretty excited about it. They should be.
I'll bet.
And in the center, we see Dionysus, the god of wine, and around him, a lively retinue of a host of mythological characters, Hermes, Pan. You've got lions and tigers and bears. Oh, my. And archaeologists were unsure of what the entire scene depicted until the sarcophagus was handed over to their conservation team, and they assembled the fragments. So it was through that restoration that the scenes have been fully revealed. We began removing the soft light sand of the dune. Suddenly, the tip of the marble object popped up. The entire excavation team stood around excitedly. As we cleared more sand, we couldn't believe what we were seeing. Parts of a sarcophagus upon which figures were carved. Gods, animals, and trees. So, yeah, that is impressive. And then once some of the cleaning and putting it together was done, they indeed broke out the... a couple of ping pong balls and some solo cups.
Who knew they had those back then? I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Well, you'd have to ask Hercules. Which, by the way, looking at this picture, something happened to part of Hercules.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. Hmm. I mean, it is interesting of all the things that could be damaged.
Well, yeah. Things happen, you know.
Things happen.
Things happen. You can write that down. Things happen, Bob.
But it is pretty cool.
Yeah, it is.
Like that history.
Yes.
I don't know if it's good for the young. Maybe it'll get younger people excited about history.
That's true. They'll go looking for all kinds of stuff now.
Yeah, because they need another excuse.
Yeah.
Right.
Maybe not.
All right. I mentioned this earlier. We go a little bit deeper, but Israel's top military official disclosed that elite Israeli commandos operated covertly inside Iran during Operation Rising Lion as part of what intelligence and nuclear experts now assess was a campaign that inflicted systemic, not just tactical, destruction on the Islamic Republic's nuclear program. The IDF chief of staff, Lieutenant General Zamir, said in a televised address on Wednesday, quote, after 12 days of unprecedented fighting, I can say the IDF operated at its best and fully achieved the aims and objectives of the operation. He emphasized that the mission had one clear goal from the start, to remove the existential threat to the state of Israel. And the lieutenant general went on to outline the nature of the threat, calling it a plan to exterminate the state of Israel, which he said rested on three pillars: a nuclear program nearing weapons breakout, a long-range missile arsenal designed to inflict mass civilian casualties, and a multi-theater ground invasion. These were not merely theoretical plans, he stated. The threat became real. All right. So they're very happy with the outcome of this entire operation. And so why shouldn't everybody else be happy? Isn't it interesting that there are some in the U.S. that actually, I mean, it's one thing. Look, you don't like the president. You don't like this guy? Okay. You're entitled to that. We live in a free country. But when you go out of your way as part of your job and utilize some sort of an agenda that's based on lies and falsehoods and doing nothing other than trying to really hurt the cause of the U.S. I mean, here's the thing. Okay, so you hate this guy. You hate the president. He's not running again. You know? So I guess in a way...
They can't let go, Bob. They just can't let go.
No, and that's... I mean, look, I guess it's fine in some ways because... I guess we don't really want them to get it together.
Well, that's true.
But here's where it's bad. When accolades and these folks that were involved in this mission, they deserve, you know, to be praised, and they deserve to be put into hero status. Even though they're just doing their jobs, they did them very, very effectively and put their lives on the line. And
yep.
So Operation Midnight Hammer... Pete Hegseth, I got a feeling he's going to come out and put the hammer down with the media.
Yeah, he's not subtle.
Yep, that'll be coming up a little bit later on this morning. Don't forget, we've got Valor. We've got folks going above and beyond. We've got local first responders, law enforcement officers, and we shine the light of Valor on one or some of those individuals. And that'll be coming up at 8:35 this morning. Happy Thursday. Still got plenty of things to touch on this morning, plenty of things to talk about. It is 7:45 right now, and you're listening to 97.3 The Sky. Happy Friday Eve, almost there. It is Thursday. Good morning. It's the Bob Rose Show. Greg Cassidy is in the house. It is, did I mention 7:49? Morning, Greg. What's going on?
Oh, just having a good time. Trying to get back in this groove of getting up at 3 in the morning.
That's crazy.
You take a week off and it's kind of like, wow, this is what the rest of the world feels like.
It is. You know, along the same lines, look, you were on vacation, but, you know, you were doing exactly what you wanted for the most part, really relaxing and not doing a whole lot.
Yeah.
But you're still moving around.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas, you know, when I was hospitalized...
Ugh, can't imagine.
I got to tell you, just being off your feet continuously for a period of time, man, it impacts you.
I mean,
I had a heart attack, that impacts you. But I think just the fact that you're kind of laying around, that is not good for you. And so...
And did you feel a little stir-crazy, kind of? You know what I'm talking about? Like you just wanted to be able to go do something.
No.
Really? No?
No, I didn't. Remember when they brought me in there, I was in severe pain.
Well,
so the biggest thing
was
pain. Yeah. And then did I tell you in the ambulance, I go, can you give me something for pain?
Uh-huh.
And a lot of times they want to, but they want to make sure there's, well, let's get a handle on what we think's going on here. You know what I mean?
They don't want anything messing with that.
Right.
So, right.
But they could tell clearly I was in pain. And they said, well, the only thing we could give you is some fentanyl. And it's funny, when you're in this, you're already in an altered state with this pain thing, so your mind's probably not operating 100%.
And we talk about fentanyl all the time.
I know, and I'm thinking, like, I had to really think about it. I'm like, is this like a test? Are they joking with me?
Right.
What are they doing? And now, I've had a fentanyl patch before, in fact, when I had my heart attack 7 years ago, and it was effective in reducing the pain. Of course, this is all medical, administered by, you know, medical professionals and all that. We're not talking about street stuff, but it did help a little bit. They did give me some of that, and then while I was in, they dosed me with, you know, morphine from time to time.
Wow, you got all the good stuff.
Yeah,
you get your fentanyl, get your morphine here. Yeah,
I don't think that my body really reacted that well to the morphine, honestly.
Like it didn't work as well as you thought it should, based on kind of...
No, it gave me some pain relief.
Okay.
It just... I don't know. It's hard to describe. I just don't think my body reacted well to it. And then any opiate is going to do, you know, something to your body, which is No number twos for a while.
Oh,
and okay. And a lot of times you kind of will have that issue in the hospital anyway. Many people do so.
So then there's a whole other issue that you weren't planning on.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you just had a good old time. I was having much more fun having my coffee on, you know, sitting in the North Carolina woods than you were. Just saying.
If you could get like a place up there and be up there, you know, part time, a couple months a year, would that be like your idea of a perfect retirement?
I think it'd be kind of nice, just to kind of get away. It's very quiet. Again, sun would come up about 6 o'clock. That's what would wake me up. I'd get my coffee, go out on the porch, which is on the second level of the lodge that my brother-in-law has there outside of Asheville, and just kind of literally you're like up in the trees, and it was just awesome, just kind of relaxing early in the morning.
It's kind of been a dream, you know, of mine for a while now.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, the expense of actually trying to have two homesteads is... Well, before it was, you know, would have been challenging, but now I...
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
You know, when you figure out all the extras, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know, maybe a like a large camper or you know, maybe a used motorhome or something like that.
Sure.
Could fit the bill, but that's something I'm maybe working toward, not toward retirement per se. No, I'd be working remote up there in the woods, and then you'd have to be stuck here in the studios, and I'd tell you...
I'm not liking the sound of
this. It's only going to get to be 74 today, Greg.
And I'm here where it's 98, humid. You're there, birds in the background singing. And
the babbling brook.
Babbling brook, of course,
really set
yes.
the stage
oh,
for this.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
And Greg just growing angrier.
And you're rubbing it in every day.
And Greg, I found someone who washes my car every day. While we're fantasizing, you might as well.
Go for it.
Might as well go all in.
Well, in that case, I got to clean your guns, too.
Yeah.
Just saying.
All right. These folks, I mean, do we get tired of talking about these lefty weirdos that are voters, politicians, they're involved in our, you know, intelligence community and every other facet of government? Listen to this. It just wonders never cease. The wackos with the Denver City Council.
Yeah.
Hey, you're on the City Council, okay? Denver. What do you think your job is? Number one, any kind of municipality, public safety is supposed to be number one, right?
Right.
They voted to stop, to shutter, to close the anti-theft auto license plate tracking system in the city of Denver.
Okay.
So
it's there to track cars that could be stolen.
So correct.
It's about law enforcement.
Well.
But they're turning it off.
Yeah. They're turning it off. Okay. Oh, it must be a really, really expensive program. No. It's like $600,000 a year, which a city the size of Denver, that is nothing. Why would they do that? Oh, think like a lefty.
Okay.
Because it possibly the same tracking system could be used by some evil jack-booted thugs like ICE.
Mm-hmm.
And they could use the data to, are you ready?
Yeah.
Deport dangerous illegals.
Who would want that?
No, nobody. Craziness. No, nobody in the Denver City Council.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, in May, they voted against renewing the contract with Flock that was launched about a year ago. The camera system monitors the area around 70 Denver intersections and was set up to screen for car theft. The system, which reportedly scans 2 million cars per month, has already resulted in the recovery of, ready, 170 stolen cars and 300 arrests.
Wow.
It's only been launched a year ago. So... one of the rare programs that government got involved in that appears to be highly effective.
But let's shut it down.
Think about that, because when you have success rates like that, you can go to the insurance company and say, hey, I live in Denver,
mm-hmm.
and we have, you know, this rate of recovery of stolen cars, et cetera, and, you know, that would bode well for most of us. The camera data also, though, helped the Denver Police Department to investigate hit and runs and murder cases. That's good, too.
Sure.
So then you say, okay, pile that in there. But nope. Despite the success, the city council's worried the data could be available by use of a large number of law enforcement agencies.
Wow.
Ones like ICE.
Unreal.
Yeah. Yeah, they'll keep your city, they'll keep the streets safe. But only so safe. A lot more coming up. 97.3 The Sky.